We'll have Clint Stoerner as soon as we track him down.
I don't know if I didn't organize with Clint whether he was supposed to call in or whether Ben was supposed to call
That's
him.
Okay. Yeah.
This is what happens when you have the two former football players trying to organize
organizing
something,
a hit.
Sean. When you gave me license to set this up, I'm like, oh, yeah, good luck with that, fella.
I said organizing a hit, and now I think about you and Clint organizing an actual hit on somebody and people being like, what happened? They shot each other. It was really weird.
The Clint's exact waiting same to time. Do an interview with us in person in some parking lot in Pasadena right now.
Stand up.
and it probably makes sense based on whatever vague instructions I gave him.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Looks like Ben's lips are moving in there, so it looks like we may have Clint here on the hotline.
All the places in Houston that people might confuse for a place in California,
yeah,
which is the most deceiving? Pasadena? Bel Air? I feel like there's one more. Bel Air that are pretty close to Bel Air in California.
Yeah, both Bel Airs are nice. I think both Bel Airs are considered nice.
Pasadena's got a more industrial vibe than the Pasadena in California, but
here,
I'm not sure.
Here, yes, but I don't think Pasadena is considered like...
It's not like a garden elite, spot elite. In L.A.
Yeah,
or in,
yeah. I think
California
there's probably some decent equivalency going on there, yeah. Let's talk to Clint Stoerner about these all-important topics. This I know, there is no Baytown in California. Unless you call San Francisco the Baytown, and then it's very different than the Baytown, Texas, that the Dirty Red is from. What's up, my friend? How are you?
Hey, man, you took the words right out of my mouth. I'm sitting there listening to that conversation. I'm not real sure what's like California, but I guarantee this old East Side ain't, baby.
No, and that's why we love it. So, Clint, good to talk to you, man. Of course, you can hear Clint 2-6 here on The Drive with Ron Hughley on Sports Radio 610. So I'm going to pose the question to you, Clint, that I put up on a poll yesterday. Your level of concern over this current C.J. Stroud shoulder situation, your choices are very concerned, somewhat concerned, no concern at all.
Well, look, I mean, for me, I think I've got to be very concerned anytime that we're talking C.J. Stroud, we're talking about his shoulder, elbow, hand, wrist on his throwing arm, and it lasts longer than a week. You know, that to me, that's the concern here is we're 4 months removed from action. Any kind of procedure that should have been done after the season as it pertains to injuries, you know, when he got hit a ton last year, that should be a thing of the past. And so I think you start connecting all the dots. I heard you guys talking a little bit about it yesterday, and you start connecting all the dots. I think for me personally, given who it is and what it is and how long it's lasted, I'm very concerned anytime that happens. I don't give a damn what time of year it is with C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, and I guess that's it's hard when we have just absolutely no clarity on the situation.
Yeah.
At what point, because I'm trying like hell not to be hyper-reactionary on this, but at what point do we maybe start to do we look in the offseason after this, after OTAs, if we don't see any Instagram stories or anything of CJ working out with the receivers, like, is there any point before training camp that we should really start to get nervous?
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. To your point, if you don't see any activity, if you don't, you know, if when they're asked about it, they're tight to vest with their answers in terms of, they asked him about Christian Harris. I don't know if that was yesterday or a couple of days ago, but they asked him about Christian Harris, and it's like, oh, no, he'll be ready for camp, man. He'll, you know, it's spot on. No, Christian's good. Christian's on schedule. This is good. And then CJ, everything's vague. And so as long as we're getting that vague response, Seth, I think there's a level of concern. I told B. Scott yesterday on our show, I mean, you know, there's very few similarities between me and CJ Stroud. One of them is we played the same position, and number two is I think we both had a work ethic and a desire to throw as much as we could and not miss a rep kind of thing. I threw a lot of footballs in my time. I took a lot of hits in my time. Never was general soreness something that kept me out or hung around for 10 days. Oh, you know, so that's the part to me. If we go, you know, mandatory minicamp and CJ's still not throwing, for me personally, I don't give a damn what time of year it is. My concern goes through the roof because the general soreness thing doesn't last 2 weeks and two plus weeks. And by the time we get to mandatory minicamp, according to what we do know, Seth, is it's been two plus weeks or it's been two and a half plus weeks. That's not soreness when we're talking quarterback. quarterbacks, especially their shoulders, elbows, hands, wrists. We've got something they're concerned about at that point.
Yeah, I guess that's the other part. You know, sometimes every now and then they'll talk about just getting a dead arm in baseball. And every now and then you hear about it with a quarterback. But usually it's when it's like in the middle of a season or whatever, where there's been a bunch of reps, and that's not the typical kind of thing that happens to a quarterback in the off season, is it?
No. And here's the other thing. No, not at all. And you even look at the guys that it typically happens to at any point in time. When you're the action of throwing a football is significantly less violent than, let's call it, Lance McCullers or Hunter Brown and what those guys do pitching, right? I mean, they're so violent. It's so rough on their arms. And that's why you see all the Tommy John surgeries and shoulder injuries and shoulder sorenesses that last for, who was it, Jose Urquidy, that had a season-long shoulder issue last year. Mm-hmm. You see that in those guys that have such a violent action. When you look at the quarterbacks, I think the reason you don't see the surgeries and so much of the dead arm stuff is because it's such a less violent action, and it's more of a full-body, rotational, controlled, compact action. And on top of that, some people look at me and go, well, hell, Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen, those guys aren't competent. You're right. Those guys are different. Those guys are shortstops that are playing football. C.J. Stroud is your prototypical pocket passing, full body action. I mean, there's nothing violent about his action. It is as pure as you want it to be when it comes to throwing a football. It is as full body as you want it to be throwing football. So I would be shocked if C.J. Stroud were a guy that ever had arm issues because he was throwing too much. Mm. Not to say it couldn't happen, but I just think his action and the way he plays the position lends itself to, hey man, it's a full body action. The last thing that's going to go out on me is my arm. C.J. Stroud's going to be a guy that's 70 years old and can throw it through a damn wall. Sean, I remember Wade Wilson was my quarterback coach in Dallas, and he ended up being a good friend for a while after that. But Wade played 18, 19 years in the league, and nobody's putting him in the Hall of Fame and all that, but he was a really good quarterback. He was a pocket passing quarterback. I mean, he was mid 40s, maybe even knocking on 50 when I was with him. And you play catch with Wade, and it feels like you're playing catch with Dan Marino. Yeah. I mean, those guys, it's just a different animal, man. Those guys can absolutely spin it. It's usually the last thing that leaves their body, and I think C.J. Stroud is one of those
guys. That's interesting. Clint Sterner joining us here on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610. So Clint, you were out at OTAs. We're going to get to some of what you saw here in a second, I'm sure. But just last thing on CJ, if he's missed potential snaps to throw the ball with teammates already with these OTAs, we got mandatory minicamp coming up next week. We'll see what happens there. And then training camp coming up. Considering that they're installing a new offense, how behind are they getting right now with CJ? Obviously, the classroom and the film, they can do all that stuff, and CJ's got the walkie-talkie, but without being under center, like, how behind, what's the potential for them getting behind in installing this offense right now?
Well, I mean, relatively speaking, he's definitely behind. You're either getting reps or you're not, right? And those reps are extremely valuable any way you slice it. But I think you mentioned the wide receivers, and that's really, to be honest with you, that's the last thing I'm worried about. CJ can fly those guys to California for 2 weeks before camp, and they can get right. The part that I'm worried about is the additional control of the offense, right? This year, the reps of going to the line of scrimmage, and I'll put it in layman's terms, just simple, because we've all heard quarterbacks on TV say, Mike's 59, right? The reps of doing that, communicating it, having complete control of the offense and getting the offense out of a bad play and into a good play, that's not going to happen overnight. The offensive line getting used to CJ's voice and CJ being the one that's doing all the communication, which it sounds like last year wasn't the case, all of that newness is the part that I'm worried about. The new center, like if Jake Andrews is the guy, I don't know if he is or not. I don't know why he's running, seems to be running with the ones, but him and Patterson, if Jake is the guy, those are valuable. 2 weeks worth of reps in OTAs in a team setting are valuable reps in terms of that communication. Those two guys, the center and the quarterback, need to, as the quarterback becomes more responsible, the center needs, they need to see the game through the same lens. As long as they're on the same page, then everything else is going to be fine. The biggest problem last year with CJ, guys, as it comes to scheme and communication, was The pressure, yes, obviously, but CJ had no idea where the hell the pressure was coming. He was snapping the football and didn't know if he was protected to his left, protected to his right, didn't know where his hot routes were. That's him in the center seeing it through the same lens. So, yes, to answer your question, it's a big deal. And I'm worried about it now, much less in a month, but it's more about that interior offensive play versus the wide receivers, in my opinion.
Okay, I wanted to have you on our show because, you know, some people can only listen in the morning or in the afternoon, so I did want our listeners to hear your perspective on it because I know you have a really good one. But now that I'm thoroughly depressed, I want to move on to some of the other things, which I also wanted your input on because, you know, you obviously have a much keener eye for wide receivers than you than Sean and I do. One of the things you had tweeted was that Higgins out there at OTAs appears to have a different style game than Nico. And I'm just intrigued by that. Like, how is he different? How is he similar to Nico Collins?
Well, I think Nico has a similar game to your smaller bodied receivers. I think he's a great route runner. I think he's got great hands. I think he's great run after catch. I think he's a better route runner in general than people give him credit for. He gets in and out of his breaks better than a 6'4", 220 guy. I think it's the difference to me is more like when I look at, now this is a big comparison here. I'm not saying he's this guy, but stylistically, like to me, Higgins is more of an Evans guy, like looks long when he runs and like doesn't necessarily look like he's running that fast until you realize the guy that's running next to him, he's leaving him, you know, it's a longer, slower strides, but he's covering a lot of ground. He's a longer, wiry guy that I think he's going to be fine. Saying he's not a good route runner, but I just think Nico is Nico runs routes like a 5'11", 6 foot wide receiver. That's how good he is, right? I don't think Higgins is ever going to be that guy. I think Higgins is going to be a different kind of player to where he's going to be comfortable with the body contact and catching the ball over his outside shoulder and the back shoulder stuff and using his length more so than Nico. Nico really does. If you look at Nico stylistically, he doesn't use his length. Right. I mean, he uses his bulkiness and his strength in terms of catching balls and body position, but he doesn't use his length really. He doesn't depend on his length. I think Higgins is going to be a guy that is going to depend more on length. I think he's going to struggle. And again, struggle is all relative. I mean, Nico's really good at it. I think he's going to get big guys typically struggle getting in and out of their breaks, dropping their weight. The quarterback reading that and knowing when to let the football go, those are typically struggles for your 6'4 wide receivers. And Nico struggles with none of that. And I would be shocked if Higgins didn't struggle with some of it. So it's just, yeah. I think stylistically, they're totally different.
That makes sense. Okay, now the other one that I'm fighting against right now as I battle my CJ Stroud depression is this. I have a hard and fast rule. I refuse to get excited about rookie slot receivers during OTAs and training camp because they're seeing vanilla defenses, et cetera, et cetera. It's a mentally challenging position to play as a rookie. And yet I'm finding myself getting excited about Jalen Knoll.
Well, I think you're spot on, but the reality of it is they're going to be forced into action. We heard D'Amico Ryan say, I think again yesterday or maybe the day before when D'Amico spoke to the media, you know, he mentioned Knoll and Higgins, and he said, well, look, I mean, we've had rookies here in the past that play right away, and he basically compared them or at least paralleled them to Lassiter and Bullock last year, which those are some those are some big rookie shoes to fill there. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be expected to play. But yeah, I think you're spot on, Seth. I get worried about the fact that we are going to end up depending on these guys. But as I watch practice, man, the Knoll kid, and again, I think you're spot on with, hey, these are vanilla coverages. We're not asking him to do much. But Seth, when it comes to the twitch, the getting in and out of your cuts, being really quarterback friendly, he's got that, man. It's licked. He's not like, to me, he's coming out of I think they're a little bit, not pro style, but they're a little bit more detail oriented. The receivers that have come out of there seem to be guys that are a little bit more pro ready than, let's call it, a Tank Dell that comes out of an air raid that's just out there running all over the field and making plays. I think there's a little bit more structure in what they were doing at Iowa State, and I think you can see that. But Jalen Knoll, to me, is the one of the two rookie receivers. Knoll is the one to me that I watch and I go, hey, man, he's going to be able to help us. He's going to be able to help us win and move the football immediately. I like him a lot, man.
I'm removing the restrictor plate. I'm full bore into Jalen Knoll now.
Yes,
that's all
good.
I need. Yes,
welcome to the club. All right. Yeah. Hey, Clint, before we get you out of here, you had eyes on a couple of the OTA sessions. We've talked predominantly about the offense in the last several minutes here. What's a big takeaway you had from watching this team defensively out at OTAs?
I think the biggest thing is Kamari Lassiter. I mean, other than just a 30,000-foot view of this secondary is going to be really good. I think Kamari Lassiter, I mean, it's time, guys, that you know, this is crazy coming from me because last year at this time I'm sitting there going, man, this kid's an inside corner. This kid's a nickel defender. And I was dead ass wrong. He is an outside corner. He can do both, but he's definitely an outside corner. And more importantly, he's Will Anderson, guys. I mean, he is, it's time that we start talking about Kamari Lassiter in the same vein that we talk about Will Anderson when it comes to, just naturally, you know, Seth, you've been around these guys. Most guys that work the way Will Anderson works, most guys, it's almost frowned upon of like, come on, man. I mean, we don't have pads on and you're pushing the tackle into the damn quarterback. Come on, man. You're over there, you know, this worker bee guy that's over there getting extra reps during the downtime with the coach, man. Whose ass are you kissing over there? You know, what are we doing here? And Will pulls it off of like, no, y'all get on my level or get the hell out of here. Like, Will is the legitimate, you want to talk about a pillar that they're building this organization around. Will is that guy. And I'm talking about from a player as well as a leader on and off the field, in every aspect of it. And I think it's time that we start talking about Lassiter in that same vein. Again, I don't know if he's going to stay at outside corner or play some nickel, because I think he could probably help us and be a pro bowler and maybe even all pro at that nickel position fairly quickly. I mean, he's that caliber player and with those instincts. But I know off the field, Seth, I think Lassiter is one that D'Amico views as a guy like Will Anderson that just sets the tone on a daily basis in every walk of playing football and hell off the field. So yeah. I think that's the thing to me, Sean, is just like, damn, man. I mean, this guy's – and he sells it. It's real. It's not – I mean, it's authentic. It's not fake, and it's not some tough guy. It's not some worker bee, some kiss up. I mean, it's real, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and real quick, Clint, I guess that's the part that I'm intrigued by this year is that, hey – like, Jalen Petrie did some really good things in that I don't want to call it slot corner. I'll call it nickelback position. But there were times where, man, I want an actual cornerback at that slot corner. And is that one of the areas where maybe they can take a step forward this year, is just having more versatility among the players they are using in the backfield? That, yeah, sometimes Kamari Lassiter is your – for a few – even if it's only a few snaps a game – when it's Davante Adams or somebody else like that, that's your slot corner in that situation. But you can mix and match these guys interchangeably more.
Absolutely, I think the beauty of it's two things, right? Number one, obvious depth. If Jalen Petrie goes down and they do find, whether it's a rookie corner out of USC or somebody else that steps up outside, you can move Kamari in, and now you're just as good, if not better, right? Number one. Number two, to your point, is I think the flexibility of being able to play a guy that's got great instincts, but he's going to help you stop the run. He's going to help you play zone. He's going to help you. He can play, man, but he's going to help you do some things and play a little bit different nickel defender. And then all of a sudden, if a team like the Chargers did last year, where it seemed like all they had was McConkey, right, you could move Stingley and you could shadow Stingley, or you could push Kamari Lassiter inside. You could bring in your third corner, and now you've got a guy in the slot that you can play man with, and you can attack that one receiver that's hurting you. You can attack him with Shadow and Stingley, or you can attack him by moving Lassiter in there. I just think it's another big-time weapon, more of an adjustment weapon probably at this point, but it's a big-time weapon for D'Amico Ryans if things – you know, if the original game plan isn't just spot on, and if some offensive coordinator's got a bead on what we're doing and is picking out, you know, the matchup issue, boy, D'Amico's got a chess move that he can make, and he just hadn't had that in the past.
That is the great Clint Sterner. You can hear him 2 o'clock today, 2 to 6 every day here on The Drive with Ron Hughley here on Sports Radio 610. And, Clint, you guys are going to be at Christian's tailgate on Highway 6 tomorrow for the crawfish circuit, right?
Come on, baby.
Let's go.
Hey, mud bugs and cold beer, baby. Let's go.
Let's go. That's life right there, man. Highway 6, Christian's tailgate tomorrow afternoon. If you're on the west side, go check out the fellas out there. Eat some bugs, drink some beer. Academy Sports and Outdoors brings you the Crawfish Circuit. Clint, we appreciate it, brother. Appreciate you making time. Have a great show today. We'll be listening.
Hey, man. Miss seeing you guys. Always good. Thanks for having me. And let's have us a good Thursday, good Friday, good weekend, boys.
Let's do it. All right. Thanks, Clint. We appreciate you. For some reason, Clint's southern drawl just makes the whole thing better. You know what I mean? Like, C.J. Stroud with a shoulder issue, but being described by Clint, I feel like it's all going to be all right. We'll see. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Went a little over with Clint, but it was worth it. Coming back, is one of the staples of sports TV about to get a really bad makeover. We are going to discuss that, and we'll hear audio from one of the staples of that staple coming up next.